This is FNX.
Listen to Shoot the Defense. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Welcome, I should say salam alaikum for the second time since I love going to the Middle East. I'm your host Stel, welcome to Shoot the Defense on FNX. I have got three co-hosts with me. First of all, the recovering person that's still here, I guess, still alive. Jan, how you doing?
Yeah, not bad, mate. Not bad, good to be back. Yeah, as you know, I haven't been well, but I'm back and ready to go, mate.
Lovely. Syphilis gone?
You said that again?
Your syphilis, has it gone?
No, it's still there, mate.
Great. Rod, how are you doing?
Yeah, let me just put my violin down.
Can you play an instrument? You're a man of many talents.
No.
You're not even a triangle?
I was going to lie then, but no.
I was about to say, you can act, you've only ever missed one penalty in your whole career, and you can play an instrument. I mean, what can't you do?
A lot of things. Oh.
And there's me saying that you're going to be the Paul Warhurst of this show, you know, being versatile and everything. But...
Paul Warhurst. Blast from the past.
There you go. And that lovely angelic voice you heard is none other than Dan DeLuca from Sofa Sports News. How you doing, Dan? Welcome back, mate.
Yeah, very well, mate. Good to be back. How are you?
Yeah, good to have you back, and I'm really sorry you're back under these circumstances because your boys didn't do you any proud tonight.
It was always going to end this way. So.
Yeah? Okay, fair enough.
Well, cool. I've got something strong in the glass. I'll get through it.
Okay, that's good. Okay, well, I'll tell you what, let's talk about that because this was game of the midweek, so to speak. And it was a game where Chelsea put their Wembley woes to bed with a comfortable win against Spurs. Maurizio Sarri showed Kepa Arrizabalaga, who's boss, by dropping the Spaniard following his League Cup final antics, replacing him with Willy Caballero. But it was Caballero's opposite number, Hugo Lloris, who kind of stole the headlines with a couple of clangers. Dan, Chelsea's first went through his legs, although given the power of Pedro's shot, I think it's a bit harsh to rip into him, but... the own goal from Trippier, there's no excusing that, is there? It was a catastrophe.
No, I think it's a good place to start with the goalkeepers because, I mean, the thing you've got to be annoyed about the most is Chelsea had a bit of a faff with their keepers on Sunday, which was well publicised. They've responded by putting Caballero in goal tonight. What do Spurs do? Zero shots on target. No shots at the guy. It's his first game. Pressure on him to perform after all the shenanigans. Zero shots on target. That's unacceptable. Hugo Lloris, I don't know where I stand with this tonight because I do criticise him quite a bit because he does make quite a few mistakes in big games, more than your average goalkeeper. The first one, I guess, it is a bit unfortunate. He stood in the right place. He's covering his near post. It squirmed through his legs. I know I feel De Gea would have saved it. I expect that shot to be saved, but they can go in, so I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. And the second one, I mean, it's a calamity, isn't it? Whether it's Lloris's fault or Trippier's fault, you can argue the toss. But I guess in them situations, you want your goalkeeper to be loud. You want him to be commanding. He's the captain of the French national team. He's the captain of our side when Harry Kane doesn't play. Or he's the captain of our side anyway. mix it up between them. So between the two of them, you know, they should get it right. But that, for me, anything in the area is the keeper. When there's not an attacker in sight, there's plenty of time for the keeper to get his shout, be loud and clear. So, I mean, you could argue he's cost us two goals there. But the disappointing thing for me is at the other end, how there's a new goalkeeper in goal for Chelsea and we've not even had a shot at him. He's not had to make a single save with his big frame. That's the bit that annoys me a little bit.
Mm. And I think it's also the fact that Chelsea's back four isn't particularly good either.
Yeah, it isn't. It's not particularly good. And you kind of feel, we saw in the last game, that we can get them if we move the ball quickly, as we did in the first game at Wembley. I know we had a few things go our way in the first 10 minutes, which does make things easier. But, you know, that is a defence that's there to be got at. You don't look at it and fear dread. You look at, you know, David Luiz, who's not a player I'm a massive fan of, and he's got mistakes in him. And I didn't feel we tested them in any way. We let them organise themselves quickly. And when when Chelsea have done that in the past, over the last 2-3 seasons, they've got into their shape and they make themselves hard to break down. But every time we got the ball in the attacking third, we didn't move it quick enough. We let them get back. Eriksen had one of his worst games for some time. And, you know, it's one of those where we got to take the defeat on the chin because, you know, we didn't deserve any more than that.
Mm. You mentioned David Luiz a moment ago. Question to all of you guys. Is David Luiz the biggest shithouse in the Premier League at the moment? I know he tried to get Harry Kane sent off tonight by kicking out at him and then getting up in his face. We saw him mumbling something to the goalkeeper the other day. I know that he's got a very strong relationship with Roman Abramovich and he's kind of like his eyes and ears, you know, kind of like the class grass, so to speak. So, yeah, is he the biggest piece of shit you've seen in the Premier League this season?
He is a shithouse. There's no doubt about that. Is he the biggest shithouse?
Well, look, he's not Sergio Ramos levels because Ramos has got talent.
Yeah, I mean, we spoke about Ramos on one of the shows I was on before when we did the Champions League review a couple of seasons back. I mean, the way he plays, he is a shithouse, but what you notice with Chelsea is he's backed up quite well by Aspilicueta. Like, every time he's up to shenanigans, Aspilicueta's never far away getting in someone's face. And the same sort of thing happened in the first half as well. And at the end, Aspilicueta's the first on the scene again. So I think as a defensive unit, you know, they're very much a team when they get up to their antics. And I think whilst Aspilicueta is a good player, I think David Luiz, when he's had good games or good seasons, and he's had some horrendous seasons as well, it's always when he's part of a team that's well organised and there's a togetherness that can cover for his lack of ability. So I think, you know, he picks his games and his moments when to shine, and it's normally when, you know, it's normally when the team are on their way to a positive result rather than when things are going against him. He tends to shy away and he can be quite easily targeted. I mean, I think there's bigger shithouses out there, I guess is what I'm saying. But he's, you know, he's certainly one of those players who likes to disguise for his lack of ability in a lot of ways, like a silly haircut. And you know the type of players, like, who are desperate to be heroes because they're not that good, so they make it up to the fans in other ways. You know, he's one of them, isn't he?
Yeah, that's right, I agree, mate. Well, Rod, that's 2 defeats on the bounce for Spurs. Not the best preparation for the upcoming derby game against Arsenal.
No, it's not, and you know, you expect them to be a lot stronger now, don't it, now Harry Kane's back. And but you know, they've had two tough games and 2 games that ultimately come away with nothing, and ultimately the season's over. Well, the season's over. They've still got the Champions League, but it'd be very, very unlikely them they're going to win that. But you know, they've still got a chance. But yeah, the league's over now, and especially the Burnley game, you'd expect them to win and give them the confidence to go into the Chelsea game. But obviously the hard game against Burnley, and then obviously a resurgent Chelsea side, which after all the antics, Chelsea did play very well on Sunday, so they just carried that on and put a good performance today and just got back to winning ways.
Yeah, Rod, you know, you mentioned the Burnley loss the other day. I don't know if you remember, we spoke about their shambolic defending for Burnley's winner the other day on the last show, and tonight's defensive display wasn't much better. I don't want this to sound like a knee-jerk reaction, but do you think Spurs fans should be concerned about dropping out of the top four?
With the fixtures they've got coming up, yes. Because, you know, the Chelsea seem to... you know, even though they got beat on Sunday, they seem to play well and turn the corner. They had a good result today. You know, there's a resurgent United side. Arsenal, you'd expect them to be there or thereabouts, even though that they're not as strong as they used to be. So it's definitely good. I think it's going to be between... I think United are going to... Even though United have got some difficult games coming up as well, though. So, but I'd expect... If it was a betting man, I would expect United and Chelsea and Tottenham and Arsenal to miss out.
Okay, fair enough. Well, Dan, I love you know, reaction tweets, especially right on full time, because you get to see who's rational, who's irrational, and some people that just sit on the fence kind of thing. And I saw a tweet from at PAFCOYS who wrote, "Trippier, Winks and Lamela are championship level. Eriksen and Toby don't want to be there. And Lloris clearly can't be asked. Yet we wonder why we're so bad." What do you make of that tweet, mate?
You're asking me?
Yeah.
So what I make of that tweet? So in bits, I disagree with assessment of Winks. I think Winks is a good player, and I think he's certainly better than Championship level. Whether he's a world beater will remain to be seen. But I actually think he's a good player, and I think he's a player who is one of those players who's not appreciated in this country because he plays football in a simple kind of way. So I disagree with that. I think, you know, we tend to have these overreactions a lot. Whether Eriksen and Alderweireld want to be there or not will remain to be seen. And actually, they've been at the club, Eriksen certainly has. He's been at the club long enough to you know, that if he wants to move on, we should be happy for him to go. And that's fine. He's done 6 or 7 years at the club, and that's more than enough, to be honest. Like, most players will be moving on within 5 seasons. And I've got no issue with that. But it's always an overreaction. If you look at some games we've played recently, where we were getting late winners left, right and centre, you look at Toby Alderweireld. He's the first one there in the crowd, kicking the ball into the fans, going berserk. He's not looking to me like a player who doesn't want to be there. It's easy to say now, because actually the first goal was his fault, if we're honest, that he got turned far too easily for a top of the centre-half. But his performances aren't the type of performances that says to me that he doesn't want to be at the club. He might well be looking for his next move, and if he is, then I guess we have to accept that, and we need to look in the market to replace him. But I think to say he doesn't want to be there is pretty loose after we've lost the game. I think it's someone who's in the panic button. In terms of the top four, and as a Spurs fan, am I worried? I guess I'm worried a little bit, because this is what fans do. Like, 4 days ago, we're looking up thinking, well, we can win these games and go within 2 points to Liverpool. So by the same token, I expect Man United and Arsenal and Chelsea to be looking up at us now saying, well, we can pull to within two points of Spurs. So, you know, we've seen this before with Tottenham, but I look at it and say, people were saying, if we beat Burnley, well, we didn't beat Burnley. And by the same token, people are already saying, well, if we lose to Arsenal, well, we haven't lost yet. So let's play the game. We're at home, if we've got a home, but, you know, more to the point, Arsenal are away. I don't expect to lose that game to Arsenal. In any situation, Arsenal are travelling away from home. They don't travel well. Player for player, I think we're a better team. I don't expect to lose that game. Now, if we lose it, and it is a big if, then we'll review the situation. But you're still looking at the teams behind. None of those three teams behind us are going to win all their games this season. You could look at Spurs and say, well, we're likely to lose to Liverpool and City. That's fair enough. But then I think Arsenal have got United pretty soon. Chelsea have still got to play United. So they're playing each other. There's points to be dropped there. And, you know, no team wins all their games. You know, we've gone up to Burnley and lost. There'll be at least one surprise result for each of those teams. So I think over the course of the remainder of the season, I expect us to hang on. But that's a long answer to that question. But that guy's tweet, you know, it's a tweet when he's just watched a very poor Spurs performance. He's probably got very excited last week about what we might be able to achieve in the league. And the reality that he's overestimated that situation has probably led to that reaction being a bit strong.
That's a very diplomatic assessment. Well done. Jan, it is a big win for Chelsea, mate, especially for Sarri. Do you think this performance and result has kind of papered over the cracks, though?
That's a difficult one still. I don't know if he's lost the players. I don't know if the players believe in his methods. You know, the board haven't really backed him as much. So do the board actually really trust Sarri as well? I'm not too sure. I think the fact that there's a lot that's happened at Chelsea this season, and let's face it, Chelsea managers in the past have been sacked for less than what Sarri's done. You know, so I actually don't expect Sarri to stay beyond next season, to be honest. I think he'll be gone in the summer.
Okay. And Rod, Sarri did exactly what we said he should do, and that was drop the goalkeeper. Is that the end for the goalkeeper under Sarri?
Yeah, it's just the manager put a stepping his authority down, which is rightly in the right, which is he's got the what's the word?
Well, his prerogative. He's in the right for doing,
yeah,
it, isn't he?
Yeah. So, and we said he was going to do that. That's the only thing he could do. He could fine him as well, which he's probably done as well. But you know, it was the right thing to do because you know, at the end of the day, no matter what happens, his number went up. He should go off. He didn't, so he's been punished, which is the right decision. But will it be the end of him? No. No, for many reasons. The keeper's very young, plus he's worth £70 million that they've paid. So I'm sure they've had the discussion. And, you know, they move on quickly. Because if these things fester, they can just spread across. So you just deal with it quickly and just move on.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail right on the head there. The fact that he's like a £70 million goalkeeper, you're going to get Bruce Buck saying, Maurizio, look how much he cost us. You're not going to play this guy that's 35, 36 years old that cost us nothing. You're going to pay the kid, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly.
There you go. Right, as we mentioned earlier, Tottenham's opponents at the weekend are Arsenal, who remain fourth thanks to a 5-1 demolition of Bournemouth. Jan, five goals, five different goal scorers, two being Mesut Ozil and Henrik Mkhitaryan. Now, we know how good these two are when they're in top form, which they haven't been for a while, let's be honest. Are we maybe, just maybe, about to see some consistency from them?
Well, they need running in the team. From what I know, as we know, Mkhitaryan's been injured, or when he's played, he's been off form, so he's been in and out the side. And Ozil, for whatever reason, has kind of fallen out with the manager, and the manager doesn't trust him, so... So Ozil hasn't played, so they both need consistency. They both need to play, and like you said, when they do play, they give Arsenal creativity. When they both don't play, Arsenal really lack. You can't, you know, keep playing Xhaka, Guendouzi, Torreira in the middle of the park and expect to blitz teams because there's no creativity in there. Yeah, you've got a lot of, you know, workman line footballers, but you need creativity. You need somebody that's gonna unlock a defence, pick a pass, shoot from 30 yards, you know, and Mkhitaryan and definitely Ozil can do that. So, you know, if you keep him fit, keep him happy, keep him in the team, it's only going to benefit Arsenal and also Lacazette and Aubameyang because they're going to get service.
Yeah, and Koscielny got on the score sheet again, so that'll do his confidence a while to good.
Listen, he scored since he's been back? 4 or 5 goals from his injury? You know, that's quite phenomenal since he's been back, so... You know, good times at Arsenal at the moment. They seem to hit a bit of form.
Yeah, that's right.
Especially going into the derby on Saturday.
Yeah. Well, hot on Arsenal's heels are Man United, who won a very tricky encounter at Selhurst Park. Rod, as you know, injuries forced Oli to make a few changes. Dalot, Fred and Sanchez started, but it was Lukaku who was the match winner. We've really laid into him this season, but credit where it's due. He took both his goals very well.
Yeah, he did. You can't really fault his work effort. It's just, you know, for a top international centre forward, you know, his touch has to be better, and that's what we have a go at him for. But you know, his work rate, and you know, as you say, he did take his goals well, and you've got to give him credit for that. You can't fault his work effort, and you know, he's said all the right things. He'll play on the right, he'll play on the left, he'll play on. He plays up front, so he's saying all the right things, and now he's starting to do all the right things, and he's getting the rewards for all the hard work he's putting in.
Do you know what? I actually can't remember the last time he scored for us before tonight. Was it Reading in the cup?
No, I know, but you know, over the games I've been seeing, when he's been playing the right, he does work hard. He does put a lot of good balls in, the balls that probably he would like when he was in, it would be in the middle. So. He does work hard for the team, and you know, as a striker, you always get these barren spells where you go through, and you just got to work through it and work through it, and that's what he's done, and he's reaped the rewards and got two good goals at a very difficult place to go.
I think Dalot and Fred had good games as well, Fred especially. You know, he coming into the game, I think it was his first start since, when was it, Boxing Day, I think it was? Yeah. A good game.
Yeah, it's a different, like I say, it's a difficult place to go. And for someone who's not really played at that level for a long time, because he's been sat on the bench, you know, he's put in a good performance. All right, we didn't play brilliantly, but how many times did we go away and you just got to grind the results out, and that's what we did. And Fred was a big contribution to that, because like I say, he's not played a lot of games, and he's come in and he's done the job.
Yeah, I put out a tweet the other day which rubbed a few people out the wrong way. I said, you know, he spends more time, you know, putting Instagram posts about, you know, praying to God and all that, and I'm thinking, well, we signed a £54 million priest, and here he comes on the pitch, and he puts in like a godlike performance. So anyway, there you go. Jan, Ashley Young got the third, a player who many think isn't good enough for United, but you know me, I like him. I've always said he's a 7 out of 10 or 8 out of 10 player. He scored a good goal tonight, did very little wrong, and kept Zaha quiet for the majority of the game. Solid display overall, right?
Yeah, absolutely, mate. I mean, Ashley Young is one of them kind of unsung heroes at United. He's one that, if you tell him to play left back, right back, left wing, right wing, he'll do there, won't moan and do a job. listen, if United are going to progress and become a dominant kind of team like there was, you know, you're not going to need Ashley Young in your team, let's face it. But he is there now. He's a squad player. He, you know, from a winger, he's been diverted into a, you know, a right back, a left back. And, you know, and like you said, he does a job and he's solid every time he plays. He doesn't let the team down. I think he can do better, you know. You know, he, on his day, he's a really, really good crosser of the ball, and we don't see as many crosses, you know, that are quality going into the box for the likes of Lukaku and you know, and Pogba and plays like that. But, you know, he's solid, and, you know, I mean, it's frustrating when you see someone like Ashley Young, who started as a right back tonight, and then with a substitution, have 5 minutes playing as a kind of right winger or right striker out of the three, and scored a goal. And Alexis, who's playing there for like nearly 2 years, can't even score a goal. It's really frustrating. So maybe Young could show Alexis how to put the ball in the back of the net again.
Yeah, exactly. Dan, tell me something. You know, James Milner, he's been lauded for his versatility. He's another player that has 7, 8 out of 10 performances, but yet he gets a lot more headlines, a lot more praise than Ashley Young does. What is Ashley Young doing, or what is he not doing to be elevated to the James Milner level to get that sort of praise?
I think it's a really good comparison, to be honest, between two players, because they've both sort of shuffled back over their career. Do you know what I think it is? I think at his best, Ashley Young was a better player.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? I'm not knocking James Milner, because actually he's been a very good player over the years. But if someone says to you, think of it like, you know, a consistently average footballer, everyone would say James Milner. And I think in his career, James Milner has never, ever, ever stepped above at any point. Ever. You know, do you know what I mean? It's always been 7 out of 10, like you say, 8 out of 10. And Ashley Young at his peak was probably a slightly better player. I think, even in a City sort of way, I think his build compared to Ashley Young is more suited to like a combative sort of right back as well. And I think sometimes Ashley Young looks unorthodox with the way he approaches certain challenges. And he looks visibly it looks worse. You've got to factor in as well that James Milner, for the last 2 seasons or 3 seasons, while he's been playing right back, has arguably been playing in a slightly more attractive side on the eye as well, which I think sometimes disguises a lot of bad performances from players as well. I just think, all in all, I just think James Milner, I think he's more suited to the right back role than Ashley Young is. I think Ashley Young was a far better player going forward, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he's not quite Paul Warhurst, as we were saying before the show. But do you know what I mean? If you think of Ashley Young at his best, he was beating players, he was bending in shots from 25 yards in the top corner. And I think for some people, seeing him slot back in as right back for a team of the size of Man United and not be replaced for 2 or 3 seasons, when you see Man United struggling, the first thing I look at is thinking, well, why is Ashley Young playing there in Manchester United side? And even though Valencia does okay on the other side, why at Manchester United is Antonio Valencia still getting a game as a fullback on the other side?
Why is he getting a game at all, mate?
Well, that's for you to answer, I guess. But I think in James Milner's case, it's not quite the same comparison. So I think, you know, Ashley Young will be subject to a lot more criticism.
Okay, fair enough. Right, speaking of Milner, it's a good little segue to the next game, which over at Anfield, a brace from Sadio Mane, one being a superb back heel, and another brace from Virgil van Dijk helped Liverpool on their way to a 5-0 win over Watford. Meanwhile, at the empty head, Man City kept themselves in the title hunt with a 1-0 victory against West Ham. Rod, ruthless, relentless, unforgiving, Liverpool absolutely drilled Watford tonight, and all 5 goals were assisted by fullbacks, 3 from Trent Alexander-Arnold. Not a bad stat, right?
Than that at Liverpool, you know, you go there in the wrong frame of mind, or they get the tails up in the first 10, 15 minutes, and it's a very, very difficult place in the first 15, 20 minutes, especially if they get an early goal, which they did, and then they just steamrolled them, like you said. So they're very, very strong at home. It's a good result for them. They're back on the top again, put the pressure on City and keep that run going. So, yeah, it was a good result. And Watford, you know, they've done very well this year. You'd expect them to do better, but you can see why that result would happen, because, you know, Liverpool could do that to anyone at Anfield.
Mm. And Watford are on 40 points now, 8th in the table. Do you think they've got the deck chairs out?
No, I don't think about the deck chairs. That, like I say, I think Liverpool got a good start. They've obviously got an early goal and they've just gone from strength to strength. And I just think, no, I don't think they've got the deck chairs out yet, because it's still in February and it's still, you know, they've had a great couple of results. They obviously had a poor result against Newcastle and Liverpool, but, you know, before that, it was on a great run. So, no, I still think they'll get a few wins, but deck chairs, no, I think it's a bit too early for all that.
Fair enough. I mean, I was going to ask Jan this, because when I look at the league table, Watford are on 40 points, Everton on 36, West Ham on 36, and, you know, West Ham gave a good account of themselves tonight. Leicester with a new manager, which we'll talk about in just a moment. Newcastle winning games. Palace obviously going to be in and around that 10th to 15th place. I mean, Watford, if they don't back up their ideas, they might see themselves slipping down the table. I know they got a good win against Cardiff the other day, but, again, getting hammered like they did tonight, should... Javi Gracia be a little bit concerned?
No, I don't think so still. Do you know what? This might sound really silly, but I actually fancy Watford to go and do something tonight. Maybe not beat them, but at least put up a fight. I just think, you know, Liverpool, couple of iffy results. Watford were, you know, a little bit off form. You know, if Liverpool are a little bit nervous, Watford might go there without no fear and play, but... Like you said, Liverpool just brushed them aside like they weren't even there. So I was quite surprised he ended up 5-0, to be honest. Listen, we've seen with Watford over the last 3-4 years, when they've hit this 40, 43, 44 point mark, like you said, the Dexter's come out, they're on holiday already. So they're not going to get relegated. So as far as I'm concerned, they'll probably concentrate more on the FA Cup and see where they kind of end up in the league.
Okay, fair enough. Right, Brendan Rodgers. Let's talk about Brendan now, because in case you've been living under a rock, you probably know that Brendan Rodgers is the new Leicester City boss, having walked out of Celtic after almost 2.5 years in charge. Now, the Watford, Reading, Swansea, or should I say the former Watford, Reading, Swansea and Liverpool manager won 2 SPL titles, 2 Scottish Cups and 3 League Cups during his time north of the border. And he even takes Collard Toure with him, who's part of the Celtic coaching staff while Rodgers was in charge there. I don't know whether it's because of the song or anything, but, you know, maybe Collard Toure is a good coach. I don't know. Dan, as expected, the majority of Celtic fans are appalled by Rodgers' decision to join Leicester and were quick to label him a Judas. I mean, look, I know Alan Brazil is a big Celtic fan, and even today he was really struggling not to say anything bad against his best mate Brendan. But, you know... What do you make of this situation? Because, you know, to label him a Judas, I don't know.
Yeah, I guess the first thing, I was a bit surprised at the appointment. I guess Brendan Rodgers went up there to go and rebuild his career. He's done a reasonable job. Obviously, he hasn't had an awful lot to beat, but he's still beaten everyone. And winning trebles is still impressive, no matter what country in the world you're playing in. You know, so I kind of expected him... On one hand, I expected him to hold out for something bigger. But by the same token, as people have quite rightly pointed out to me, we're outside of the top six. Who is bigger than Leicester? And there's probably only a couple of arguments for the clubs or teams currently who can take that post. And Leicester's title win obviously elevates them somewhat. So maybe he has looked at it and thought, right now, this is the best chance I'm going to get for some time to go back at a Premier League club where I've got something to work with. And what I mean by that is... They've got some established players there. They've got some players who still left over from the title-winning season as well. But they've also got some good youngsters in there as well. Obviously, Tielemans is only on loan. You've got Damari Gray, who's young and got a lot of potential. You've got Chilwell, who's very young. So there's a lot of players there Brendan Rodgers probably knows and has looked at and thinks, well, do you know what? I can work with these guys and I can coach them. Brendan Rodgers, still to me, is very much more in the coach mould rather than a manager mould. And despite, I mean, I don't like the bloke, I never have, I'm not a fan at all, but like it or not, he did do a good job at Liverpool. Okay, he fell short, but it seems nowadays you get punished more for falling short than you would if you fell miles short, if that makes sense. So I think he's probably looked at it and said, well, this is the best chance I'm going to get for... He's obviously in his head thinks this is my last season at Celtic anyway. And if he waits for the summer, what's he going to be left with? It's an unknown. So I think he's taking it for that reason. Celtic fans, and I know a couple, I think it's more the timing of it that upsets them, that someone's deserted them in the middle of the season And I think it's, you know, it's the whole football fan tribalism thing again, isn't it? Like, how dare he walk out on us when we're in the middle of something? We could win a treble-treble. I mean, what is a treble-treble in Scotland? I don't know. Yeah, it's never been done before. But it's in an era, where, you know, the only real competitors, Rangers, are still recovering. You know, it's not enough of an achievement for Brendan Rodgers to stay at this time when you look at what he's been offered. So I think Celtic fans, whilst they'll be angry, I think most pragmatic people would look at this and say, timing-wise for Brendan Rodgers, what was he going to gain by staying there? Celtic are still going to win what they were going to win. You know, Brendan Rodgers is not going to make that much more difference to the end of Celtic season. The league's wrapped up again. They're going to win at least one of the remaining two. They've already won the League Cup, haven't they? So, you know, the chances of them getting knocked out of the Cup are not going to decrease by Brendan Rodgers being there. And I think at the end of the day, it's just another thing for fans to poke a stick at. If anyone walks out on your club midway through something, it's not going to be well received. But I think when all the dust settles, I don't think anyone really suffers from this at all, if I'm honest.
Yeah, well, I know they took a banner to the game at Tynecastle tonight against Hearts, and it read, "You traded immortality for mediocrity. Never a Celt, always a fraud." So, yeah, a bit angry they are. And again, going back to what I said earlier in the show about tweets, you know, the timing, and you can tell people that are angry or not. And, you know, Michael McDonald, known as Mikey_boy_1993, tweeted, "No man is bigger than the club. However, if Rodgers had left in the summer, having won 8 in a row, but no Scottish Cup, for instance, he'd have left with everyone's respect and gratitude. To leave in February, having tarnished his record of domestic domination for Leicester, is unforgivable." I picked out a couple of reaction tweets from Celtic's official account, actually, and GeordieGirl88 wrote, "At least Brendan could have been honest and said he's gone for the money, nothing else. As for his Celtic, will always be my club rubbish. He doesn't mean a word he says, as who would leave a club they supposedly love with 11 games to go? I thought he had principles, appeared not." R4TSR said, "Don't know what's worse, the fact he left or that he's continuing his line of how much of a Celtic supporter he is. Whilst I've enjoyed the success he's brought, it's been sullied by the timing of his exit. That was not the best interest of the club, only himself." So, Rod, loyalty seems to be the theme of Celtic's fans' displeasure. As someone who knows a thing or two about loyalty, can you see why people are furious with Rodgers?
Yes, you can, because, you know, most of these Celtic fans, and whether they're right or not, probably are right. It's a bigger club. Now, is it a bigger league? Obviously, no, it's not. It's not the Premier League, and obviously, he obviously doesn't get that same buzz, or has pound signs been a part of it? Probably a bit of both. And, you know, you can see why they're so upset, because they're going for such a historic thing with the treble, that, you know, Celtic's a massive club and they're probably going to win the league. But you can see why he's done it, because, you know, it is the Premier League. Leicester, they have got money now. They have got a young, decent, exciting squad, which probably Brendan Rodgers could do something with, bringing in the right additions as well. So, yeah, the league champions, 2 years ago? I know that was a freak season, but, you know, they've still got better players in through that and got stronger, in my opinion. So, yeah, you can see both reasons, but, you know, for me, it's just a personal preference, isn't it? What's his wages? He's obviously not a Celtic fan, or he wouldn't leave Celtic, because, you know, if you're a Celtic fan, you love Celtic. Why would you leave there if you love Celtic? And so he's obviously talking crap there. So, but yeah, you can see both sides, to be honest.
I think the thing with a bigger club, Celtic are a bigger club historically. They're a bigger club because of the size of their fan base, and obviously they attract a lot of fans from Ireland, and in addition to support that. But then, whether it's a freak season or not, and whether I liked it at the time or not, which I didn't, Leicester City were champions of England 3 years ago. But they're champions of England. So the size of the club thing starts to balance out there. And I think, what yardstick today do we use to measure Celtic as a big club? Is it because they win a Scottish League? Because, quite frankly, that can't count anymore. Because actually, the Scottish League was weak as it was. And then with Rangers being banished to, like, the third tier and having to work their way back up, where they still haven't recovered, it's a given. So it's a bit, to me, like, you know, PSG win the French League a few leagues and a few seasons in a row, and suddenly they're a bigger club than Liverpool. It doesn't work like that. So I think what we've got to remember as well, so for me, the only real yardstick for Celtic's progression as a club in the modern day is, well, what are they going to do in Europe? And actually, Brendan Rodgers' record in Europe with Celtic was poor. He didn't progress him at all. You could argue he had one or two tough groups, but you know, you'd expect the team making progress to actually make inroads into that. And I think he's 2 seasons in the Champions League. I think he had a goal difference of like minus or 16 goals against and 18 goals against in 6 games, which isn't good enough. And you look at Leicester, they had one stab at it. You know, they've beaten Seville, they've narrowly lost out to Atletico Madrid. They got to the last 8 of Europe. So in terms of measuring the club size, it's a tough one to compare. But if you're Brendan Rodgers and you're looking at the two clubs right now, I don't think it's that hard a switch for him. I think the only thing anyone could be upset about is actually it's the end of February and the season's still running. But that aside, you know, we all think our club's bigger than what they are in comparison to the rest of the world. I'm sure, you know, Spurs fans will probably say they're bigger than Man City, you know, because of history. The reality is right now we're not. Manchester United fans will probably say they're the biggest club in the world. The reality is that's probably Real Madrid. And I think Celtic are probably overselling their club like everyone else. But, you know, we can't just dismiss Leicester's achievements because it was unfashionable. You know, this is only 3 years ago. We're not talking about 10, 15 years. This is
relevant. No, he's got a point there. If you ask most of the 20-year-olds and you ask them if Celtic won the Champions League or the European Cup, they'd probably say no. So,
no, they wouldn't remember.
And with social media today and how stuff gets out there, you're probably right. Leicester probably evened that out in the last 2 or 3 years. And, unfortunately, with the crash, which has its own historic stuff, a link to it, so yeah, you're probably right, to be honest.
Yeah, and it's not the way it should be. I mean, people like us, we'll know about the Lisbon Lions and we know about Celtic's history and stuff like that, but you know, it's a bit like it's no different to my own team, Tottenham. At the end of the day, you know, I can sit there and say, well, we're a bigger club than Manchester City because we did this in 1961. The reality is, right now, no one cares. That's the harsh reality of it, and I think that's where I am with that particular. With that particular issue. I think, you know, they're a great supported club. They're, you know, a fantastic football club, a fantastic institution. But in terms of today's game as a manager, and you're looking at where do I go to achieve the next step, he's had 3 stabs in the Champions League with Celtic. He's gotten to the groups twice and he's been battered. The third time he's got to the Europa League, the first decent team he's come up against, he's gone out comfortably. And he's got to look at it and say, well, what's there left for me to do here?
Didn't they get knocked out by AEK Athens in the qualifiers at the beginning of the season?
Yes.
And you're looking at AEK Athens, are basically Glasgow Rangers, really. The same sort of situation. They went into liquidation, they started again, they got themselves promoted back to the top division. They even won the Super League last season. So, yeah, it's a bit of an embarrassing one. But I think, you know, I don't blame Brendan Rodgers for going to Leicester. I don't get the fact that a lot of fans are getting pissed off because of what he said about being a Celtic fan. You know, Robbie Keane has supported every team under the sun, every team that he's played for. In fact, every team he's joined, it's been a boyhood dream of his to play for him, even LA Galaxy, for Christ's sake. So this whole notion that he's a Judas, he's there, look, at the end of the day, he's left the club to bet himself. Other Celtic players have done it in the past. I remember Van Dijk has done it. I seem to remember when he left, no one really said anything. And players have joined Celtic and have made themselves. So, as I said time and time again before in the past, Celtic are Rehab FC. Managers go there to resurrect their careers. That's all it is. It's a stepping stone. That's the way I see it. I don't know. Jan, if you were Brendan Rodgers, what would you have done? And I don't mean, you know, if you're getting chased by your child with a cricket bat, allegedly, but...
I probably would have made the move. I mean, you got to admire him a little bit as well, because it would have been easier to stay at Celtic, maybe win his 3 trophies and being a history maker. The fact that he's taking the decision to leave is for the better of his career, isn't it? I mean, you got to look at Celtic in a whole. Yes, they're a massive club, but they're playing Scotland, who they're going to win the league before the Bills even kick at the start of the season. So we know that, right? He's not had any funds of substance in the last 2-3 years he's been there to improve that team, to have a crack in the Champions League, right? The reason why he went out to AEK Athens at the start of the season is because they didn't even know if Boyata was going to stay at the club. Now, that's how level Celtic are. That, you know, that Boyata was their main man, It was in August. They didn't know if he was going to leave or not. But Yata didn't want to play, so he didn't play. And then eventually they got knocked out by AEK Athens, who were probably worse than the Celtic. So that is what he had to deal with. Had to sell, like, Dembele. He sells his best players, and Celtic don't have the budget. And let's face it, what big players of this era are going to go to Scotland and play? No matter how big Celtic are, they're not going to attract the big players. So what he's achieved there, regardless of who he's playing, is remarkable. The fact that you can win all these trophies and not one side beat you over the course he's been there is wonderful. It's brilliant. It's a brilliant achievement for me. And Leicester are ambitious. They have got money. He can have another crack in the Premiership to maybe kind of prove himself that. And I kind of agree with Dan. His tenure at Liverpool, actually, I think he did well. All right, he didn't win the league. He failed at the end. But to get them to where they was, again, was an achievement itself. And you never know what he can do with Leicester. I'm not saying they can win the league again. But if he gets them a top four finish, or maybe, I don't know, fifth, sixth, or something like that, and he builds from there, then maybe he could say, you know what, I've come back to England and I've proved the point. I can understand Celtic being upset, but like you said, players move in January or the start of the season, so why can't managers? And for everything that he's given them as well for the last 2-3 years, I don't think they should complain.
You mentioned Dembele there. Did you see his reaction on Twitter?
I did, yeah. That's why I mentioned it. He said, what did he say? Oh, I know, or something like that, didn't he? Or that's how I know. Basically, it was probably Rodgers saying to him, you can't leave us, blah, blah, blah. And now Rodgers has gone and done the same thing, so...
Well, what basically happened, Jan, is that Dembele wanted to leave, and Brendan Rodgers basically, well, after he was sold, he was saying, the whole episode was disappointing, and yeah, there was a line overstepped by Dembele from a behaviour perspective, and Dembele's like, well, you're a bit of a hypocrite, mate.
Yeah, now you know the truth, or something like that, he mentioned. Yeah, but that, you hit the nail on the head, mate. Players do leave. You talk about loyalty and this and that. Adebayor's kissed every shirt he's played at. Like you said, Robbie Keane, I love Liverpool. I was a Liverpool fan growing up. Oh, my Irish roots, I'm Celtic. Players go for money. They go for kind of, maybe to prospect their career a better.
Fans are like that too. Clubs. You fans are like that too. You were loving Mourinho a few months ago. Now you're loving Ole.
I wasn't loving Mourinho. I wasn't loving his style.
The rod is out.
I'm joking, Jan.
Sorry, mate. I don't know when you're joking with me. I thought it was another personal attack, but yeah. But you know what I mean, Rod.
I understand. Yeah.
Yeah, you can't blame Rodgers for leaving.
At the end of the day, he's best in his career. He's in the Premier. He's in the best league in the world.
Exactly.
At the end of the day, Scotland is. It's not the best league in the world. The Premier League is, and that's where everyone wants to be, and that's where he is. And like Jan says, he's got a good squad, and they've got money. So. He's probably on better money. He's in the best league in the world. He's in the public eye. He's obviously wants to use that as another stepping stone to be at a top four side. And that's what he's come to do. So at the end of the day, you can't fault him for bettering his career. It's his life. And, he's going to live it. But he is a bit of a hypocrite.
Mm. Well, look, Celtic have reappointed Neil Lennon. Now, I know this is probably going to piss off a few people, but Celtic are like 8 points clear, and to be fair, they could bring in Mark Hughes, Sam Allardyce, or dare I say, Alan Pardew, and they'd still win the league. But
David Moyes?
David Moyes, but look, I know Lennon left Celtic in May 2014, and I seem to remember it was because he felt he'd taken them as far as he could. So what has actually changed?
Well, the first thing that's changed is he hasn't got a job. And Celtic haven't got anyone to appoint, and that's the fundamental point here. Celtic
I've given you three names, and Jan gave you one.
They've picked him up off the street to finish the season, haven't they? He's a caretaker manager who knows his way around the club, and it's a quick fix appointment. Are they going to appoint him permanently is the question. And, I can't really see it. This is not going to be like an Ole situation where there's a clear problem for him to solve, and if he solves it, it's hard to turn him down. He's managing a team that, like Jan said, but well, we've all said so far that, you know, before the ball's kicked, we expect him to win it. He's not going to throw away an 8-point lead, so he's not going to get the job for winning the league. What is he? What can he do to make it permanent? I think Celtic had just got him in as a stopgap, surely. I thought it was interesting, though. I know what the score was. I don't know how the game went because I was watching Tottenham lose, obviously. But his first game was against Hearts away tonight, which he's obviously not a popular soul in that part of the world. So I wonder how he got on. He might have a touchline ban already.
They won 2-1 in the 92nd minute.
I can imagine he run down the touchline and picked up a corner flag and threw it into the home end.
Yep. That'll be Neil Lennon. Oh. Right, Brendan Rodgers, back to him. He was in the stands to watch Leicester beat Brighton 2-1 and promised his players there are special things on the horizon, whatever that means. It's just going to be more sound bites, isn't it? That's what he's good at. He's good at sound bites, I must admit. I don't know, maybe he means they're going to go to Disney World next January as a reward for being knocked out of the FA Cup. I don't know. Another club stuck in the right, Everton, ended a run of 3 defeats on the bounce with a 3-0 win at Cardiff. Rod, I didn't know this, but before Tuesday, Everton hadn't played a game since the 9th of Feb. So it kind of looks like the break worked because they looked sharp and practically controlled the game. They even coped with Cardiff's long throws and high balls into the box. It's a much-needed win, especially with Liverpool on the horizon, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it's good to get back to winning ways. And, you know, Cardiff, they're in a little of a dip and probably a good time to play them. So, yeah, it was a good result for him.
There you go. That simple, and your mate Gylfi Sigurdsson scored twice as well.
Who scored? Say that again, sorry.
Sigurdsson, your mate, he scored twice.
Yeah, they've been in a bit of a dip as well. So they need to get back to winning ways as well. Because if they don't, there's definitely gonna be a change there because they've had a bad run of results. But you know, it's still. Back to winning ways. I'm sure they won the one on weekend. They win against Cardiff, and you know, a few more wins, and they'll be back up the table, and he'll be saving his job because you know, for a good couple of weeks, they looked like they were struggling. He looked like he was going to lose his job.
Yep, job is safe for the time being, anyway.
Unless
get battered at Liverpool, or should I say at Goodison against Liverpool. Let's see what happens after that. But anyway. Jan, Newcastle, yeah. They're creeping up the table after a second consecutive 2-0 win. It was a pretty straightforward win at that, mate. But special mention to Fabian Schär for an absolute thunder bastard, in the words of Andy Gray. What a hit.
Yeah, mate. I mean, it was a quality goal. And, you know, like we've all probably said on the show on numerous occasions, the only reason why they're getting results is because of one man, and that's Rafa Benitez. The guy is a brilliant tactician. He knows how to get the best out of his players. You know, with the budget that he's had, you know, you want to talk about Celtic's budget, probably Newcastle's budget is even worse. You know, they've bought, you know,
Sports Direct running. Budget, mate.
Sorry, mate?
Sports Direct budget.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, it just shows the fact that, you know, they have spent a few quid on Almiron and how it's kind of energised the fans because they've got like a hero all of a sudden to worship, a new player comes in, gives a lift to the squad, to the team, and, you know, it's paying dividends. And, you know, let's face it, they should have beaten Wolves a couple of weeks back as well when the keeper made the howl on the 96th minute. You know, they won the other day, they won again last night, and, you know, whatever Benitez is doing at the moment is working wonders. And that's why I said that Newcastle won't go down. Pure to the fact of Rafa Benitez, no other reason.
There you go. And Dan, Huddersfield shocked Wolves with a 1-0 win, which gives them a fighting chance of finishing 19th. That's purely because Fulham lost the game, this time against Southampton, who moved out of the relegation zone at the expense of Cardiff. Now, only 2 points separate Cardiff, Southampton and now Brighton. This is going to be some race to avoid the final relegation spot, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, but I've looked at the fixtures for the relegation battle a couple of weeks ago. I work in Cardiff. I spend a lot of my time in Cardiff, so I know a few guys who are Cardiff City fans, and obviously they were quite optimistic going into this week's fixtures. A couple of home games against sides who, you know, they could beat on paper, and they've lost both of those, and they've lost both of them heavy. And I think in terms of where Cardiff are now, I don't think they're going to get out of this. I think their goal difference is the weakest of the teams around them as well, which is going to come a factor there where where there's quite a lot of teams clustered around. And I look at Cardiff, I don't see what they got. I know they needed a goal scorer. We know what happened with Emiliano Sala. It's very unfortunate. We'll never know if he would have made an ultimate difference. But what's happened to Cardiff is, defensively, they went on a run. They went on a run at home where they were picking up wins. I think they had like 3 wins and a draw in 5 home games. And Neil Warnock had worked out a formula to win. And their centre-half, Sean Morrison, come back from injury. And he seemed keen to get him straight back in the side. And it seems to have unsettled everything. And that's always a danger. Even at a high level, you know, when you bring in players back from injury, when you put them back into a side that's winning straight away from the off, it just changes things a little bit. And you can't really get away with it. I mean, a lot was made when Harry Kane was injured. Spurs won 4 games. He's come back and we've lost 2. Coincidence? Maybe. But I think when you're at the bottom and you find a winning formula, particularly at home, I think you need to stick with that and ride it out as long as you can. And I think Cardiff's bubble's burst now, and I just can't see where they're going to get the points from. Their fixture list is quite challenging. I think their last 3 games, they've got Man City, possibly Man United, maybe. But they've got 2 of the top 5 in the last 3 games, so really challenging. Whilst he hasn't shown us much yet, I think the Southampton manager, you know, seems to be the type who's capable of going and getting out. I think the only team now who are going to come into it is Brighton. I like little Chris, but Brighton have been dropping like a stone quietly. You looked at a table on like New Year's Day and you would have said everyone up to Brighton is safe and the 7 teams below them are in trouble. Brighton's record at home as well, without picking up points, has been poor. So I think it's going to come down to Brighton and Cardiff for that final spot. I think Southampton are going to find wins to get out of it. But you look at, you know, I look at this time of the year now, I look at the goal scorers. I mean, you look at, you know, the best goal scorer in the bottom 6 or 7 is Mitrovic, but obviously Fulham are too far adrift. If Fulham was 17th, 18th now, you'd say, well, Mitrovic could get a goal to keep them up or whatever. But I look at Cardiff, I look at Brighton, I can't see where these goals are. Murray had a bit of form at the beginning of the season, they're dried up. So Huddersfield are obviously gone. They might finish 19th, as you say, which would be nice for them. I think they deserve that, just for trying to play progressive football at least. Fulham have been disappointing, but I think Cardiff will go down and Brighton will be quite lucky to escape.
Rod, has your opinion changed or who's going to go down?
Say again, sorry, mate.
Has your opinion changed as to who's going to go down?
Well, no, like, I still think Huddersfield and Fulham have gone. I agree to a certain extent. I still think Brighton will be okay, though, because, you know, they do have Glenn Murray, even though he's been injured, he hasn't scored goals. You know, he does know where the net is. And defensively, all right, they've been rocky at late. You know, I'm sure he'll get it right because he's an excellent coach, Chris Hume. Yeah, I still think it's between Southampton, Cardiff, and yeah, that's it. It's between them two.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Huddersfield and Fulham are gone. Cardiff, because of the lack of goals, I think Cardiff will go.
Okay, fair enough. A couple more things before we wrap it up, gents. The Championship, yeah, and I know that you've been studying that league for a while now. Leeds have dropped down to 3rd after losing to QPR. I know they're only 2 points away from top spot, but it looks like the wheels might be coming off a little bit for Bielsa's men. It seems to be happening quite a lot in, you know, February, March time. The players get a bit tired. Do you think they're going to be able to maintain some form of Championship run?
Well, if he carries on spying, I think he'll be all right. Bielsa's experienced, though. He's been around the block. Obviously, he's not done the Championship before, and we all know what kind of a league the Championship is. For me, it's the hardest league. It's even harder than the Premiership. Anybody can beat anybody on the day in the Championship. As you saw last night with QPR beating Leeds. It's a difficult one. You know, Leeds' support, Leeds' fans can actually get them over the line. The fact that they've got this, you know, 30, 40,000 at Elland Road and it's always packed, you know, that's an extra motivation, that's an extra boost. So I think the Leeds fans could play a massive role in them going up this year. I really do.
Absolutely. And things are looking good for Birmingham as well. Got a good win at Bristol City the other day.
yeah, you know, our friend Mark Meredith will be happy.
Yeah.
They're a funny side, Birmingham, for me. You know, they're very, very unpredictable. You don't know what you're going to get out of them. I mean, they could be 4-0 up and end up losing 5-4. They're just that kind of a side. But, you know, Gary Monk's doing all right there. Like you said, they're picking up results. Bristol City are in the playoff spots. So for Birmingham to beat them was a good achievement. And Forest as well. Forest are doing well.
Got a good win against Derby, didn't they, on Monday?
Yeah, on Derby. It was an atrocious game, to be honest. It was really bad. But it's a local derby. It's fiery, as you expect. And, you know, they've given themselves a chance for the playoffs as well. So it's interesting. I mean, it always is the Championship. Every year, you know, it's a good league to watch. The standard, it's good. So, yeah, long may it continue, the Championship, because it's one of the leagues that you definitely want to watch.
Well, look, Bristol City have got the final playoff spot, and they're on 53 points. Then you've got Derby with 51, Birmingham and Forest on 50. Then you've got Preston and Hull and Sheffield Wednesday on 47. So there's only 6 points there. And practically every game from now to the end of the season, you've got 12 games left. Every game is almost like a six-pointer for them lot. So, yeah, it could really hot up. And then you can't discount West Brom because they're only, what, 6 points from the top. So you just never know with this league. I think it's the most entertaining league. I don't know what you guys think.
No, I agree, mate. I mean, you can look at last season still. I don't know if you remember. I think Fulham went on like a 23... you know, game beat and run or something. And they nearly blew it. They lost at the last game of the season, which they, you know, I think, was it Birmingham that beat them?
And then, so they lost to Birmingham on the last game of the season.
Yeah, and Cardiff drew. And Cardiff went up.
I think Cardiff lost.
No, Cardiff drew 0-0 at home.
Did they?
Yeah, they drew 0-0 at home and got a point and then went up. And then Fulham had to obviously go through the playoff route to get there.
But so, it was a weird situation, wasn't it? Where Cardiff had to win to guarantee their automatic place. They didn't win, and then Fulham didn't win either.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So it just shows what kind of a league it is. That, you know, from 1 minute that you can go 23 games and beat wherever it is, and then blow it in the last game of the season. And there's some big clubs in the Championship still.
Well, yeah, the majority of the league is made up of big clubs, mate. I mean, you look at
Villa, Forest, Sheffield Wednesday, Sheffield United are doing well. You know, Norwich all of a sudden have picked up form this season. There's, you know, like we all touched on, it's one of them leagues that you definitely want to watch. If there's a Championship, if there's a Championship game on the telly, you probably end up watching it because it's entertaining, definitely.
Mm. Yeah, so I think with the Championship as well, there's always a team every year who falls away. Every year, like, you can't rest on your laurels in this league. You can't go 6 points clear at the top, or, you know, 4 points clear of automatic promotion in the places, and suddenly, like, stick your feet up and have a cigar on and coast. You know, you can't do that. And like you said, with the big clubs, I think there's only five clubs. Well, they're not big clubs, but there's only five clubs in the Championship who have never played in the Premier League. So a lot of these clubs have all been there before. Some of them had some recent experience. But, you know, I'd like to see the likes of Nottingham Forest get back.
Not with that owner. No.
Maybe not. Maybe, you know, you can pick a hole in any club, though. You look at Leeds' owners. I mean, they're not exactly... you wouldn't want to go around there for dinner necessarily. But then,
yeah, but
you know, with Leeds, they've started seasons well recently, haven't they? Leeds have fallen away. And they've prolonged the challenge this time. But just in the last month, they've just started to drop a few points. So I think it's going to be tight up there. And I wouldn't rule out West Brom from 4 points back picking up one of those automatic places. I think Norwich will definitely get one of the two. I think they're banging in goals, and I think they'll hold on. And I think Sheffield United have got a dodgy result in them, so I think it'll be between Leeds and West Brom for that second place.
Mm. Rod, how impressed are you with Darren Moore? Because, look, if you look at the other two teams that got relegated last season, they're languishing in mid-table. Swansea struggling, Stoke City, they had to get rid of Peter Crouch. That's how desperate they were to free up funds. But Darren Moore's kind of kept that nucleus there. They're doing well. They've got the good results. And they're in with the hunt of a potential automatic promotion. Sorry.
Yeah, he's done really well. He's obviously done really well when he took over. And, you know, he's obviously steadied the ship. He's obviously, players would have been going in and going out. And he's still kept on winning and at the top of the table. And they've got a real chance of
of going up, and I really, really hope that he does, because he's done a fantastic job. And you know, I think I'm sure I've told you this before, but you know, when I was at Torquay Apprentice, I used to clean his boots.
Who, Darren Moore?
I was his boot boy, yeah.
How big were his boots? He looks like he's got really massive boots.
Almost as big as something else.
I wouldn't want to clean either of them things, so I'll be honest.
Yeah.
Super.
It was. He had big feet. That's all I'm going to say. Yeah.
Good luck to him.
Who had bigger feet, him or Dion Dublin?
I'm not sure. I never cleaned Dion Dublin's boots, but no, he was a top bloke. He was only about eight. I think he was a first year professional when I was my first year apprenticeship at Torquay, and yeah, it was a Mark Sale and Darren Moore. I was cleaning their boots. They were both like size 11, size 12. They were max stiff, but yeah, he's a nice bloke, and like I say, he's done a brilliant job. And just hopefully that they continues, and you know, bringing Dwight Gayles in was a masterstroke, really, because he's a goal machine in that league. He just can't transform into the Premier League. I don't know why, but yeah, he does well in that league. So that was a good signing. And yeah, it's tight up there, and you know, it's very, very tight, and probably a group of eight teams could get promoted. So yeah, it'd be tough, but hopefully he just continues it on and does get promoted and comes straight back up.
Mm. Speaking of Dion Dublin, have you heard of Dion's Doob?
Dion's what?
Dion's Doob. It's an instrument that he's created. I was about to ask.
Oh, right, yeah, he plays the saxophone or something like that.
Yeah, he plays a saxophone, but this is like a drum. Next time I speak to Paul Parker, I'm going to ask him what he named the dude after.
Actually, I have seen him. I've seen it a couple of years ago when he came on TV and shown it and he was talking about it.
Doesn't he do like Homes Under the Hammer as well?
Yeah.
There you go. He's into property as well as instruments. The guy's an all-rounder. He's the Paul Warhurst of reality TV. I don't know. Final note. Jan, Barcelona, they literally gave Real Madrid the D, didn't they? 3-0. They're in the Copa del Rey final. They're going to face either, was it Valencia or Betis, I think?
Yes, they play tomorrow.
Yeah, so I think that's the first game of the... Well, I think they've got the El Clásico at the weekend, is it? So it's kind of like a warm-up game. So do you think Real Madrid are going to get spanked as much as they did tonight?
Yes.
That's simple. There you go. Yeah. That's the end of the show. Great stuff. Yeah. Well, that's it, ladies and gents. Dan, Rod, Jan, it's been an absolute pleasure having you guys on. It's always great to talk to you about football, about everything else, especially Dion Stoop. Dan, before I let you go, Twitter handle, mate.
It's DDL_SSN, but I'm currently banned. I'm not sure why.
Who have you upset?
So if you can remember that for a couple of days, then by all means, add me up. See if I can rebuild my supporter base.
Which blue tick person have you offended? It wasn't Donald Trump, was it?
No, it weren't Donald Trump. I'm not sure who it was, to be honest. I was in a really bad mood on Saturday, and I was misbehaving. So we'll leave it there.
I'm going to have to trawl back and find your tweets. I don't know. Mr. Paddy Power Ambassador.
Yo.
What's your Twitter handle?
It's @ Rod James Giggs.
Huh. Why aren't they tagging you any tweets these days? I'm not happy with this.
Why? What, sorry?
Why aren't Paddy Power tagging you in any of their tweets?
What tweets?
Well, I don't know. Just tweets in general. I mean, you know, they should be giving you more exposure, man.
No, it's all right. I think the advert's doing all right.
Okay, there you go. No worries. Fair enough. Yeah?
That's all the promotion they need.
Okay. Yeah?
Yannick's Jay.
Excellent. A couple of things before we wrap this up. Quick shout-out to everyone that's on the FNX network. You've got Chronicles of Aguna, One Up Front, 4231 Podcast, DD Footy Factory, 3 Midfield, Bros Talking Soccer. So that's it, guys. We have a Twitter account @ Shoot the Defence. We have a Facebook group page. Please feel free to join us. I don't know if Dan is still on it, but I'll find you somewhere. And that's it. So until next time, guys, take care.